The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Monday. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. Sad news to report, breaking news here in the last few hours. At least 23 dead and many injured in an apparent large tornado in Alabama. Fatalities could rise. It looks like most of the deaths in Lee County, Alabama. Here is Lee County Sheriff Jay Jones.
This is the most significant damage from a storm that I've seen in Lee County in many, many years. I'm sure it would match up with what we've seen in some of the other areas in Alabama in the last few years. This is not an urban area. It is a rural area. All these people that have lost their loved ones, of course, so we pray for these families. They're going to have a tough time ahead. The others who have lost everything they have and are homeless at this point, literally, we're certainly going to do everything we can to get the resources to them to help them.
Yeah, to echo what the sheriff was just saying there, Gary, Alabama Emergency Management Agency spokesman Gregory Robinson said that no deaths have been reported in the state beyond Lee County. In fact, saying that Beauregard there in Lee County was that center point,
right,
where most of those deaths occurred, a small, very small community there. And now the place of one of the deadliest tornadoes on record.
Jones said the apparent twister traveled straight down the key local artery in Beauregard, and that the path of damage and destruction appeared to be at least a half mile wide.
Yeah.
He said single-family homes and mobile homes were destroyed. He had told reporters earlier that several people were taken to hospitals, some with very serious serious injuries. We know an 8-year-old girl was reported as being killed here. There may be more children, as they believe the death count, could rise. I mean, it's now night, and there is so much, debris at this point that, we probably won't find out more until morning.
Yeah, they were using, this is according to the reports a couple hours ago, they were using drones in the area that had heat-seeking capabilities to see if they could find any survivors in the rubble and in areas where they weren't able to get to. Of course, with all the destruction, you can't get vehicles into certain areas. But with those drones, that technology, assuming that they can use those still after dark, and I believe that they can. I believe the reports included that usage after dark. They'll continue to look for survivors. There's over 150 first responders in that area alone. And if you look at Alabama, other areas in the southeast also getting tornadoes, none are as deadly. We haven't heard of a number of deaths in other areas, but Georgia, Florida, and other states also experiencing tornadoes late Sunday.
Which, again, we won't know more probably until tomorrow, but when you see this, and as the sheriff made it clear, this is not an urban area. It's not a suburban area. It's a very, very rural area. And so with, but to have a path that is a half mile wide, you just wonder how long it was in order to hit that many homes in order to kill 23 people.
Right.
And how many people, still may be trapped underneath debris. So keep these people in your prayers.
Yep, absolutely.
And we'll keep you updated throughout the morning of these, the alleged tornado. I don't want to say it's an outbreak of tornadoes, but mm-hmm. It was the one, from what we know, one tornado that caused all of this damage.
Right.
I know there were other tornado outbreaks.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen one from Georgia and other places, and because of that storm that is moving through this, as we call it, late winter storm. I mean, we're feeling it here. I mean, the whole front that moved through here, we're going to see temperatures that we just don't see.
Mm-hmm.
Cold temperatures early in March, and that's affecting a significant portion of the nation, including some very, very bad weather across the South.
Yeah, looking at there was a map from the National Weather Service that they put up after the tornadoes went through that showed the number of counties in that area in the Southeast that had tornado warnings issued during that storm as it came through. And it's just when you see that, as you mentioned, Gary, it's rare to see that this early in the season. We are heading into tornado season with spring starting officially here in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was yesterday afternoon I was thinking as I looked out my back window, and it looks pretty dark out there. And I just started thinking it's March here, and I remember the tornado that roughly hit, I believe it was late March in 2000.
Right.
Because it was right before I moved to Texas. I had interviewed here, and it went through downtown Fort Worth, if you remember.
Yeah, I was watching that play out live, of course, on television. It was it was rare to see it happen in an urban setting, and growing up in Tornado Alley, you get kind of used to it during the spring and summer of tornado warnings and all of that, and to see it go through an urban area like Fort Worth and see some of the damage hit large buildings.
Skyscrapers
and glass that was, you know, just flying around everywhere. No stranger to tornadoes. The town where I graduated high school, just a couple hours northwest of here, experienced one April 10th, 1979, Wichita Falls, Texas.
Yeah.
And this tornado was massive. It was an F5 tornado, an EF5 by today's standards, but just a massive tornado. We have colleagues and friends, you and I both, that survived that tornado. And it was, thanks to getting to shelter in that town, of course, includes, and in many areas, most areas in the South, tornado shelters that are underground. But they're coming up on the 40th anniversary of that tornado in about a month. But our thoughts and prayers for those, all of those affected there in Southeast Alabama. As you can imagine, they've set up shelters and many of the areas that have been affected by the storms for people to go that right now don't have a home. One of the things that that I've talked to friends and family about in the wake of the destruction is that you're trying to assess, you know, everything, and then you look at maybe the rubble. I mean, just nothing but wood and scrap that is laying on the ground that used to be your home. And they'll be having to deal with that for months to come. It will stay with them for many years. And, of course, on top of that, the concern for the loss of life in such a small community, 23 people to be gone in such a small community, will be something that community feels for a very, very long time.
And we will keep you updated throughout the morning on whatever we hear from authorities in Southeast Alabama on the deadly tornado that hit, 23 deaths so far. Also coming up on the show, the Democrats continue to investigate obstruction of justice against the president. They want to talk to 60 people. Meanwhile, Devin Nunes has a list of 32 people he wishes to talk to on the dossier in Hillary. Democrats continue saying that there is an enormous evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, but they can't state one allegation. In fact, the only one you continue to hear is, well, because he fired Comey. And, you know, it's interesting because there seemed to be an intensity of that over the weekend.
Right.
Take away the fluff of the CPAC, debating the Conservative Political Action Committee met, and all the rhetoric coming out of there. And CPAC's a nice thing. People that are conservative, and many who think they are conservative, go there and they debate.
right. That's funny that you say that, because we mentioned last week that on the left right now, and you see it every primary season, it just depends on which party is having their primary. And now the Democrats are up for 2020, and we talked about how it is going to be the battle to see not only who hates the president more, but who's more liberal. And for, you know, CPAC is that one, you know, get together where they'll have that debate, to trying to find what conservative ideas are, or who's a conservative and who isn't, and that's kind of where you go with the Republicans if they're having a primary. We saw that play out in 2008 and 2012, and the results were in 2008 John McCain becoming the nominee, and then in 2012 Mitt Romney. Both can easily be described as moderates, and which makes us wonder where the Democrats will end up if they have their debate of who's more liberal. If that happens and it really starts to fragment those on the activist left in terms of those that are running, could you, as a result of that, get a Joe Biden if he decides to run as the nominee?
Well, the president gave an extremely long speech.
Yeah.
By the way, I wouldn't suggest he give that long of a speech anytime in the future.
Right.
You can give it there because, I mean, that's a place, if you're going to give a two-hour speech, that's right. Where you give it. I wouldn't give that long of a speech again. But it was Nick Gillespie, I believe, from Reason Magazine. He's a libertarian, mm-hmm. and so he's got a ton of disagreement with the president, but he wrote an article saying, did the president just win the 2020 election?
Mm.
And I thought he made some great points about what the president did in a very, very long speech, but I think it's extremely important to understand that the president actually did lay out the vast majority of things that he believes. Now, it might have been scattered throughout a very, very long, and some people say rambling speech, but they were all included in there, and that's what he pointed out. He said each and every one of these things were pointed out, exactly what the difference is between him and the Democrats, between the Republican Party and the Democrats, between conservatives.
Yeah.
And people who think they're conservatives, and but by the way, we just say that because doing this for the longest time, there was a survey over the weekend. Well, not over the weekend. In fact, it was just publicized over the weekend. We had talked about it a little bit, how there's more conservatives in the country than liberals, and liberals just aren't there. And there's more conservatives. In most states, there's still more conservatives. There's only six states where there's more liberals. You and I always look at that and say, eh. Because I can't tell you how many people I meet in my life that tell me they're conservative, and when you break them down on the issues, they're not.
Right.
They're populist. They're not conservative.
Right.
And can't tell you how many people have called this show and said, I'm more conservative than you guys. Really?
Well,
state what your beliefs are on certain issues. And it's like, well, no, you're liberal there. No, you're liberal there. No, no, you think you're a conservative, but you're not.
Even with me, I have to, because I have no problem saying I'm a conservative, but then I have to, in the back of my mind, I'm going, okay, but what does the person I'm talking to define as conservative?
Yes.
You know, if it's somebody I know well, then it's, I think, a given. Somebody maybe that's heard the show or somebody that knows me, that's one thing. But then you get into if you're talking to somebody and maybe you know them, but you've never discussed political ideas, in the back of my mind, I'm going, yeah, I'm not sure what this person believes in terms of conservative ideas, how they would define those.
Yeah.
And
when I say that about C-SPAC, I'm not insulting them. I'm just simply stating that there are many conservatives and many people who are not conservative but believe they're conservative that mm-hmm. are there.
Yeah, right. No, it's, no doubt. I think you've seen that over the years. I mean, back in the day, McCain went to CPAC the year after McCain-Kennedy failed. And it was somebody wrote somewhere, I forget which publication it was, his mea culpa. And I said, now, if you listen to what he said, it really wasn't a mea culpa. Mea culpa would say, you know, after thinking about it, I realized that this idea is not going to work, and it's the wrong idea. Of course, that wasn't going to happen. So the closest you get to that is we realized that most Americans didn't want it, which is different. And the reason that's important is because you can have all of your pundits show up and do all the coverage of it and we can have all of those discussions of the ideas, but those who still remain in the play, remain in play in terms of possibly running one day, you have to listen to every word they say. And which is why I think, while I wouldn't have gone as long as the president, it's important for, I think, him to appeal to that conservative base. He brings with him a strong record. Right now, economically, if we're to believe the reports over the weekend, possible lifting of the tariffs with China and a deal to be had there in the next few weeks And then beyond that, you know, you can see probably, again, more talk about border control. Mm-hmm. The one thing we talked about with the president and the executive order and declaration of national emergency is that when it ends up in the courts, it's going to be quiet in the courts, but the president can still campaign on it. And he's likely going to do that in 2020 if it does not get to a decision point. And he'll win that debate on border security. He already has.
More to come. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Also coming up here on the show, Hillary Clinton says the country is in a full-fledged crisis. Oh, just one of the things I wanted to mention here, because when we were talking about the president's speech at CPAC, and it is true. They said, even though, you know, it rambled for 2.5 hours, mm-hmm. Over 2 hours. So the president was joking and very upbeat. He said, look at the difference, the positive attitude. Look, we live in a great country. Let's joke. Let's have fun. I'll ramble a little bit. I'll BS. I'll do this. I'll do that. I'll throw everything out. And then I'll also put down the 5 or 6 things that I believe in, that we all believe in, that's completely different from them, that we believe we need to do to fine-tune this great country.
Yeah.
They, on the other hand, what? Hate the country.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, it really is an attack on the values of our nation more and more. Yeah. I mean, you have the president who's asking for money for a wall. He wants to build a wall. They have been, long before that, they started working on, of course, sanctuary city policy, now sanctuary county, sanctuary state, but now giving benefits to illegals. Giving deference to illegals, the gun bill. Well, if an illegal immigrant tries to buy a gun, Republicans tried to put this in the bill. If an illegal immigrant tries to buy a gun, then ICE will be notified. Oh no! They voted against their own bill,
right?
Because of that one amendment. It's bizarre.
Insane. It really is. And you know, the president needs to, and his campaign people need to make that complete distinction over and over and over again. So we'll get to that. You know, this is going to happen. Ocasio-Cortez now being scrutinized for every non-climate change advocate behavior.
Mm-hmm.
See the latest one? She jumped into a car that only gets 17 miles per gallon. So yeah. People are now, everything she does and what she's saying is, look, I just live in this world. No,
you set the standard.
You're
telling us we need to do this.
If we're doomed in 12 years, you need to take the lead.
That's right. Walk the walk.
New polling on who wants socialism and a whole bunch more.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
A system that produced rain and snow yesterday in portions of the central and southern plains and the deep south is on its way eastward. We'll see those rains remain in the south and the snow line dividing where we'll see the mixed precip right up along areas of the Appalachians and Alleghenies, with New York City receiving some light mixed precip. The system will be moving fairly quickly today, and by tomorrow will be off of the East Coast. We have turned the page on a new month, and the Climate Prediction Center has its March, April, May 90-day outlook issued. In terms of temperature for the central U.S., we'll be right at about average. East and West Coast, we should be above average temperature-wise over the next 90 days. And then in terms of precip, the data shows that for the southern plains and the south, we should be below average rainfall. Welcome news from many southern states. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Right Wing Machine, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning. Welcome. Thanks for being here this morning. And it was a good weekend, overall good weekend. I'm feeling much better. That's all I got to say.
Good.
Good. You know?
Good.
Last week was a complete blur. Do we do anything?
I don't know.
Do we get ourselves in trouble at all?
I don't think so. I hope not.
But I'm feeling good. All I did was sleep and rest and do all that kind of stupid stuff and now I'm ready to go again.
Good. Good.
So where do we go?
Wondering what this executive order for the president Monday looks like, because you and I talked about it with this whole executive order for free speech on campuses, universities.
Yes. From what I know, I haven't seen the executive order. From what I know, you will be denied funds, federal funds. If you get funds, you'll be denied
ultimately
federal funds.
The threat, but I don't know where, I guess the measurement standard is or who.
Neither do I.
Enforces what?
I think, is it a suggestion? Is an executive order that's a suggestion?
Well, I go back to the Department of Education and Justice Department joint edict that came down for public schools and during the Obama administration on transgender students. I guess my question would be, in this case, if a student feels that their free speech was violated, you're going to have to go through the steps to demonstrate that. And then at some point, I guess the Justice Department is going to have to investigate it and find out whether or not that is the case. You can or you have the Justice Department reviewing policies of pretty much any university that gets federal money, and any policy that does not fit the guidelines.
Okay, right.
Then you could temper it from that level. And not necessarily have to enforce it on any and every complaint.
Level. Right. So in itself, the executive order simply would state that any campus that gets that gets federal funding needs to promote free speech. And if you violate a student's right, or if you violate free speech rights on your campus, then your federal funding could be in jeopardy, but who makes that decision would be the Justice Department in a lawsuit, most likely based on a story.
Yeah, right.
Someone being denied their free speech rights.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to think of the one guy, what campus was he attacked on? The one conservative that last week. I don't want to get the university wrong.
Don't know what campus that was. I don't remember.
Now, would they look at that and say that is a civil rights violation?
Well, because if you have another,
was that Berkeley?
Was that Berkeley?
Okay,
Brian's telling us it was Berkeley. Right. And so then the question would be: okay, who violated the executive order? If it's a student, that's one thing.
That's one thing, right.
You can't
right.
hold the right. campus, right. University in that case, responsible. Unless there is some language, and we don't know what the actual executive order says yet. It's due out Monday, later today. Unless they say that if you did not provide, ample protection for that student, or did not enforce this after a student was attacked. I think that gets into a dangerous area, because then you're going to, if you have students acting on their own as activists that aren't necessarily acting in the interest or representing the university, how do you enforce that at that level? I guess is the question. I don't know that you can. Because you're likely to have, if it is going to be on a case-by-case basis, rather than one big broad policy that says your policy as a campus must include this language, and then they leave it at that.
Okay, here's an example. A professor is fired because they would not use the specific gender pronoun of a student.
Right.
Is that a fireable offense?
Yeah, that would be a good question. Just depends on the executive order and how it's written.
Now, if I'm in my own company and I, as a boss, tell you you must use the proper gender pronoun, well, then you have to, correct? If I tell right. you as the boss, so from a boss, can a university set employee codes of conduct which may be outside the norm, but you are able to enforce that because you're the employer? Now, a Ben Shapiro, a colleague of ours, works for our same company, being denied the right to speak when obviously Ben Shapiro is an absolute mainstream conservative speaker, but he is denied it because the fear of the administration of the left.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a perfect example. Because there's been a couple here in just the last couple of weeks that he has been denied, I believe.
Yeah, and I think it... the only way to enforce it is just to have a broad policy about the actual, or a broad executective order that covers the policy of each university. But in doing right. that, you're requiring them, each university, each campus, to set up enforcement of that policy.
I believe this executive order is symbolic for the most part.
Well, except for the fact that it comes with the threat of holding back federal dollars.
Right, which means the Justice Department would have to invest. That would be after the Department of Justice investigated it, which Trump may be wanting them to do anyway. Now, or is that Trump's effort to have the Department of Justice now focus on these kind of cases? Because the executive order itself does not make the decision. It would mean the Department of Justice would have to do an investigation, and after the investigation would say you are denying these students their free speech rights, therefore... what funding could the Department of Justice stop?
Right.
I don't know what that would be, what
yeah,
they could
know.
Stop to begin
with. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a lot of questions come along with it in that how do you enforce it? You know, you have this attack on Berkeley. The video out there is very clear. There's no doubt. But that's one student over another student.
Right, which you're not going to be able to...
And that's already against the law to punch someone, to hit them, to assault them. It's already against the law.
Even if they're a Trump supporter?
Right. Well, I don't know. It was Berkeley.
Oh, okay. Okay. Or a red hat?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you enforce something like this. It can be symbolic, politically speaking, but if you attach something to it, I mean, the punishment for the universities is the risk of losing those dollars. So they're going to have a policy. They're going to have to reshape their policies, possibly. And beyond that, they're going to have to enforce them.
Well, they don't reshape. I don't see anybody. I don't see the executive order coming out and Berkeley changing their standard. I'm not talking about Berkeley because of this incident. You put out the executive order, fine. How are you going to enforce it? You're not going to change your policy until you're forced to by the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd have to go through that whole process of here's the executive order. Well, then you've got to find the incident where somebody in the federal government would have to be the Department of Justice, would have to find that incident. Then they would have to go after you for that. And how do they go after you for that? Do they go after you for that in a criminal way or a civil way?
Well, that was my question about the joint edict between the Department of Education and Justice Department. You know, they set up a guideline that really, if you think about it, every school at that point, every public school,
this was going
to have to,
right.
Was going to have to, and come up with new policy and then enforce it. Because, again, the threat is the Justice Department will come after you.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's an executive order stating that college... Okay, now that I can understand. So you have to come
up... If he writes it this way.
Okay, well, that's a great point. I wasn't thinking about going back to what Obama did, but if you follow what Obama did, yeah, I can see that. We're going to put through an executive order stating that you must come up with a policy promoting free speech, mm-hmm. and it must say this, 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 and this. Otherwise, you may lose your federal funding.
You must provide protection for students who wish to gather on a campus, or it doesn't even have to be gathering. It one student. It's not about groups. It would be one student. If one student is at a, you know, wants to hold their own, I don't know, protest rally or just make a statement, the university has to be accommodating in that, because otherwise it is symbolic. I mean, politically it's symbolic anyway. But the point is that if it is actionable, and it is tied to possibly the loss of federal dollars for that university, they're going to have to create a policy. They're going to have to get together and decide what their policy is going to be and how they fall within the guidelines of that executive order. Now, having said that, that executive order is likely to be challenged immediately, as all the executive orders from this administration are.
Okay, I just did a quick Google search on it, trying to find out if any Democrat has come out against free speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's what I said during our pre-show meeting, is what do you say that is counter to this? How do you counter as a university or as a Democrat? How do you counter something that promotes free speech? The question is, what does it require of the universities? We don't know because we don't have it in front of us.
Right.
But ultimately, if you're going to tie it to something actionable, which is the possible loss of federal dollars for your university, they're going to have to create policy. There's no way around that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get aboard, we would love to hear from you. Coming up following the top of the hour, the Washington Post published an editor's note, and they stated that their early reporting on the Covington students was flawed. Happened late Friday night.
Yeah.
And, by the way, a lot of people took note that it happened late on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And after the family had hired a high-profile attorney, it when you look at something, especially the lawsuit that from this, the attorney is going to go after damages that they believe are lasting damages. The threats that came against the student, Sandman, and others along the way, and what that cost the family during that time. This is way, 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 way too late and way too little from the Washington Post. It would be one thing if it were that evening, the next morning, even a couple of days later. But now you're talking about something where, because this is what the attorney will say, the damages are done. And the fear that the family had to live through during that time as a result of the false reporting, what the students had to go through, the other students, including the fact that the entire school was shut down as a result of possible threats, that's not a small thing. And it is not fixable by, yeah, we could have done a better job.
You know, one of the things I've seen is that will the lawyers for the Washington Post and whoever else sued try to make Nicholas Sandman a public figure?
Right.
Because he was out protesting earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a public figure.
No.
He's a high school student. Because you protest with the masses does not make you a public figure.
Right.
We are public figures.
Mm-hmm.
We as adults have chosen to do this. You can make the case we are public figures.
Right.
You can't with Nicholas Sandman.
No, you cannot.
You can't. He's a high school student.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes from there, if any other media steps in to try and, I guess, I don't know, temper the concerns or the lawsuit threats along the way.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Not really much of any new update from southeast Alabama, where a devastating series of tornadoes ripping through Alabama on Sunday, killing at least 23 people in one county. The victims, including children, died in Lee County, said Sheriff Jay Jones. At least 12 of those deaths occurred in an area of just around 5 to 6 miles south of the city of Opelika.
Right.
Jones initially reported 14 deaths later Sunday. He updated the number and told CNN affiliate WRBL that number may yet rise again. Jones described the massive damage. It appeared as if someone had taken a blade and just scraped the ground. He estimated the path of destruction about a half mile wide that stretched several miles to east from where the tornado touched down. So that's still all we've had. That's the update you know, we really gave you when we started the show, and we know it's dark, and they really can't do much searching. There's apparently just an incredible amount of debris right now. So
Yeah, they said 23 dead and dozens that are being treated in local hospitals. And as you can imagine, this being a rural area and small communities here, certainly those resources are stretched thin. They have well over 150 first responders still in that area, looking for survivors and helping those that need it. But it was a fairly fast-moving storm system that moved through the southeast late on Sunday, not only affecting Alabama but other states as well, including Georgia and Florida, affected by those storms. So we'll keep you updated if we get any updates throughout the morning. Earlier and in the evening on Sunday evening, they were reporting that authorities were using drones with heat-seeking capabilities to see if they could help locate others that may be still alive in that area. We don't know to what extent that search is going to continue, but certainly here in a few hours, as the sun rises, those authorities and those first responders will be back out on the scene if they're not still there, looking for survivors and assessing the damage.
We will keep you updated as soon as we get any new information. Well, now, this was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The President's CPAC speech over the weekend and some of the analysis of it. This may be one of the most beautiful things that you will ever, ever hear in your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Until tomorrow's show.
Yes.
CNN doing an analysis of the president and his CPAC speech. One of their analysts that was on was CNN analyst Samantha Vinograd. And she commented on the president, and they played this audio clip and then commented.
Lines of protecting America's interest, defending America's value, and reclaiming our nation's priceless heritage. We have people in Congress, right now, we have people in Congress that hate our country. And you know that. And we can name every one of them if they want. They hate our country.
Sam, the idea of preserving heritage taps into historically darker times, certainly. Not only that, though, you say what we heard from the president in those remarks also could pose a national security concern.
Well, his statement makes me sick. On a personal level, preserving our heritage, reclaiming our heritage, that sounds a lot like a certain leader that killed members of my family and about 6 million other Jews in the 1940s.
Straight to Hitler. All right, straight to Hitler. Now, I mean, that might outrage you at that point, right? Mm-hmm. Now, but it's not the first time.
No. No.
And you're probably not outraged because you're wondering where we're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there happens to be another young man out there doing his research. His name is Matt Walking. Matt is a communications director for Senator Bill Cassidy in Louisiana. And he started tweeting after he saw that. And he said, this is really interesting. So what he did was he went back and he did a little bit of work on who Samantha Vinograd actually is. Who is she? Well, Samantha is an advisor for the Biden Institute.
Huh.
The Biden Institute, and I'm reading this straight from the Biden Institute website, established at the University of Delaware's Joseph R. Biden Junior School of Public Policy and Administration, is a world-class intellectual center and destination for scholars, activists, policymakers, and national leaders. Our mission at the Biden Institute, to influence, shape, and work to solve the most pressing domestic policy problems facing America. The Institute is focused on the issues that have animated Vice President Joe Biden's public career and is rooted in two guiding principles he has long embraced: economic opportunity and social justice. Okay? So that woman who you heard say that by Trump coming out and talking about our nation's heritage, she made the comparison that he is Hitler because of it. She is an advisor, and if you go to the actual website of the Biden Institute, you can find her picture right there as one of the lead advisors for the Biden Institute. So where am I going with this? What does Joe Biden have to do with this, right?
Right.
Yeah, what does Joe Biden have to do? Trump said it. He's Hitler. So Trump is Hitler for saying that, huh? Let's hear Joe Biden, for him talking about we need to, you know, what, regain our heritage.
Hmm.
Let's go to Joe Biden in a speech from 2011.
It's time to stand up. It's time to fight back. It's time to reclaim our heritage, and it's time, and we are ready.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, the only thing you may be able to get the president on is plagiarism.
There's that.
But if you are being intellectually consistent, Samantha Vinograd would have to say that the institute that she represents, the man who is the leader, the spiritual leader, the inspiration, he was Hitler before Trump was Hitler.
Sure. And should be disassociated from that organization.
Should be, yeah.
I don't know what you call it after that.
He should be disassociated with the Biden institution because he obviously is Hitler.
Right. Now, he could come out and say, you know, like one of his one of his fellow Democrats once said, I was for reclaiming our heritage before I was against it.
No, now I'm against reclaiming our heritage before I was for it.
Yes. Well, no, he was for it.
It was in
2011.
Oh, he was for it before he's against it. Okay, now he's against it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, so we'll see if he does that. Well, actually, we're just curious about what the organization is going to do. You have to disassociate yourself from Joe Biden. I don't know what you're going to call yourselves or what you will be about at that point.
We're the Institute.
Yeah, exactly. We don't make the rules here. We just apply the words and the criticism.
Well, I mean, you can't find anything more beautiful. They hear Trump say she represents Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
She represents the intellectual center of Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
She goes on CNN to comment. And when Trump says we need to reclaim our heritage, he's Hitler. She represents the man who said that before Trump ever said it.
Yes.
She represents his intellect. She represents his mindset. She represents his dream
his
of
thought,
America.
Ideas, mission statement.
Yes, his thoughts, his ideas, his mission statement for America. He said it first. Does it make her then? She actually is an enabler of Hitler before Trump was an enabler of Hitler.
She represents the same thought, does she not?
She went to work voluntarily for Joe Biden. See how ridiculous this can get?
Mm-hmm.
But look, she set the table.
Not our playbook.
No, this isn't theirs. Not our playbook, her playbook. She wants to play this way, let's play this way.
Right.
Defend that if Trump said it, it's Hitler-like, and Biden said it, it's not Hitler-like. Based on what? Then go a step further and tell us what it's based on. She can't.
No. All you can do is ignore it.
Right.
You know, you can tell the world that they need to quit using gas-powered vehicles while you get into a vehicle that averages 17 miles per hour. That's the left.
No, 17 miles per gallon. If
I'm sorry.
17 miles per hour, she might have a point.
Yeah, 17 miles per gallon. And that's the hypocrisy that has lived on the left for a long, long time.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, well, we'll get to that coming up here in a little bit, but that was just so funny. She said, I live in this world, and you're making, and they said, no, we're not. She went after the New York Post. New York Post, you know, they came back and said, wait a minute. We talked about that when you campaigned. Your campaign was 138 feet from the nearest subway stop. We looked at your campaign expenditures and how many times you took Uber. You're the one that's saying the world's going to end. If
right.
you truly believe the world's going to end, then you should behave in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And we know people do behave in a certain way, don't we? What's his name? The guy that was...
Ed Begley Jr. Leonardo.
Yeah,
I mean, aside from his jets that he used all the time, when he was on the ground where people could see him, he used a Prius. You going to walk the walk or not?
And then remember she was out last week and got caught with her chief of staff was eating a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, look, you're the one that is telling America we need to change that. You're telling America we need to change to a communist society because the earth is going to be doomed in 12 years until finally you say, well, it actually wasn't literal. It was we're trying to make a political point here, and it's justified because I'm morally right. Well, if you're really that concerned that the Earth is going to end in the next couple of decades, let's say, it maybe not be 12 years exactly, even though you use that, then why are you still doing what everybody else is doing? Why haven't you stopped?
Well, she talked about the sense of urgency. Where is that?
Right, exactly.
Now, I understand in defense of her chief of staff, the quickest way to get rid of cows is to eat them.
That's a good point, right.
But the other part of that is the fact that she's never going to, this is never going to apply to her, which we said from the beginning. We don't need to document what vehicles she uses or how she lives her life. We know that it never applies to the person that's preaching to you. You're wrong for doing it. You should worry about having children. You should worry about the vehicles you use and the mode of transportation and what you consume in your diet. That doesn't apply to me.
You see the pictures of the people waiting in line for Bernie Sanders' speech and the memes that were out there. Are they waiting for Bernie Sanders' speech or is this a bread line? But we said, I think as recently as Friday, we said this about Bernie Sanders, Mr. Mm-hmm. Socialist.
Right.
He owns three
mm-hmm.
homes.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody needs, I don't have three homes.
No.
I don't own three homes. Why does Bernie Sanders get to own three homes? He's owning three homes and telling you you need to change your life?
You only need one.
You only need one and a tiny home.
He's preaching to me about my choices of deodorant and how we have too many choices of deodorant.
He's got three homes.
Stores. He's got his choices of homes.
You should only listen to a socialist if they live in a tiny home and walk everywhere or ride a bike.
Right. And stand in bread lines.
And stand in bread lines. Or you don't eat bread.
Right. They give up carbs. I'm not standing in a bread line because I don't eat carbs.
I couldn't stand in a bread line. I can't handle the carbs.
Well, there's the other thing.
So I'm the ultimate socialist.
The government's... See,
I want one home.
When we fully become a socialist or communist nation, Gary, many problems are going to be out there because, well, see, I need gluten-free bread. Well, you can't have carbs, and other people can't have carbs. They may be sensitive to this and sensitive to that. Well, see, I'm lactose intolerant back here, so you're going to have to.
Bernie,
we're going to have to expand our choices in the bread line. It's also going to have to be a gluten free line over here, dairy free line over there, zero carb or low carb over here.
The United States, the most socialist food lines on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
The most, I don't mean the most, so I mean mm-hmm. the most food lines in a socialist society.
Highest number, yes.
Yes.
Yes, we'll have food lines everywhere. Okay, honey, you go over to the gluten-free line. I'm going to stay over here in the low-carb line. I'll meet you afterward.
Where's the sugar-free line?
Right. Where's the vodka
Sorry,
line?
Those are too expensive to produce.
Exactly.
You ever buy any sugar-free stuff? You see how expensive it is compared to regular food?
And the sugar substitute is going to kill you. So, you know, look, I want all natural. I'm in the all organic line.
We never even talked about that. The socialist food line, the actual diet, really sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The socialist diet is not a good diet.
Well, you think there's
diet-conscious United States.
Yeah, right. You think the Soviet Union was serving up gluten-free and all organic?
Vodka is carb-free, though.
It's the line I'm going to be in.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing. A common question among drivers might be, can I use a prescription drug and still drive? The answer is yes, if certain conditions are met. DOT regulations strictly prohibit Schedule I drugs, a class of substances with no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. Use of all other prescription drugs hinges on what the prescribing doctor tells a driver. For a driver to stay on the road while taking prescription drugs, the prescribing doctor needs to be familiar with the driver's job duties and health history. The doctor must also tell the driver that it's safe to take the prescription and it won't create a safety risk while operating the CMV. If your doctor doesn't know the duties associated with driving a truck, you're considered medically unable to operate a CMV. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Another poll out there on socialism. Let me see the latest NBC News Wall Street Journal poll. As a philosophical label, socialism fares dismally alongside capitalism in the public's mind. Just 18% of Americans react positively to the mention of socialism, while 50% react negatively. Capitalism draws almost exactly the inverse reaction, 50% positive and 19% negative. Now, this goes along with the polling
that has been out there here the last couple of weeks that showed that young people, the majority of them, in fact, like socialism, and the majority of Democrats actually like socialism. It depends on how you ask the question and who you ask.
Yeah, we've said with polls, you really have to qualify the respondents, I think, on a much greater level today, especially when you ask about certain labels like that. You have to find out first how much they know about socialism.
We here on Red Eye, though, have cut through all of it, and we know what Americans want.
Mm-hmm.
Americans actually don't want socialism. Even Democrats don't want socialism. What they want are what they perceive as the benefits or the free stuff of socialism, but they don't wish to pay for it or don't wish to be regulated or lose their options or choice in socialism.
The vast majority of Americans have no idea what we're talking about. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye.
That's true.
And that came up from it was a long time ago when we were talking about the three branches of government one day. And it was the same day that the survey came out that the majority of Americans, vast majority of Americans, could not name the three branches of government. And Eric and I looked at each other and said, why are we talking about this? And then we thought, okay, because our listeners know what it is, but the majority of Americans did not. So that's
yeah,
where that comes from.
Yeah, other radio shows have really stupid listeners.
Oh, yes, ridiculously.
We're going to name names after the top of the hour.
Yes.
but it goes back to what we were saying about the.
Incidentally, I want to mention something.
Okay. I knew you were going for that button. I knew it. No, it does not include Mark Levin. It does include Ben Shapiro, though. I'm just joking. Oh, we're going to hear about it. I'm going to get an email. Did you guys really say this? Yes, we did.
No, he's got a
Did you mean it? Mostly no.
He has a sense of humor.
We're just joking.
Well, that's right. The management might not.
I'm sorry. Who's on in the middle of the night? Okay. All right. This meeting's over.
Point made.
It goes back to the gosh, how long ago was that poll that showed the majority of Americans couldn't name the three branches of government?
Oh, I think it was maybe 2 years ago.
And then from that, we were like, okay, then what are we doing? But that goes back to earlier in the program, earlier this hour, talking about those pollsters and qualifying the respondents.
Right.
Because if you ask somebody, you know, if you get somebody, a young person on the phone and say, do you agree with socialism? And they say yes. Okay, thanks, bye. Well, you haven't done a complete survey, in my opinion. Could you define socialism? Or here's what the definition of socialism is. Even when you get into that, the idea itself is more complicated. We're talking about, you know, for the most part, the control of capital, right? The government control of capital. You hit on something, Gary, that we've been talking about for years, and the idea that people want more, they want a bigger government. They want the government to provide more for you, do more for you. Even the ones that aren't getting something directly from the government, you know, they're not getting a check, they're not getting welfare assistance or anything else, but they want the big government there. They don't want the intrusive government. And, of course, you can't have one without the other. Then you get beyond that, the socialism idea. In 2016, the reason that Bernie was really surging late in the primary was because he was talking about the free stuff, but mainly it focused on college education.
Right.
And those kind of things, especially with young people who right now are paying college loans or trying to get into school or somewhere in between, those items are always going to resonate with that group. And they were like, yeah, that's great. But you have to go back to that one couple in California who came out, and after Obamacare had been in place for a couple of years, they realized they were paying much more for their health care. And they were, their response was, well, hey, we supported Obamacare. We supported the whole idea of the Affordable Care Act, but we didn't know we were going to have to pay for
it.
Right,
so you actually didn't support Obamacare.
Right.
Because you just supported what you thought were people getting, you supported the benefits of it. What we are as Americans is we're free stuffers. Mm-hmm. Not socialists, we're free stuffers. And we buy into a significant portion of us buy into the victim mentality. Because when you think about it, Bernie Sanders wasn't selling socialism. Bernie Sanders in his last campaign was selling jealousy and envy.
Mm-hmm.
You, poor college student with all these loans, the billionaires are the reason that you're here. So what there's, again, you're a victim. There is an oppressor. There's a victim. There's an oppressor. Jealousy and envy. You deserve part of his stuff. Well, that's actually not socialism. It may lead to socialism, but that's not what he was selling. When you sell free stuff, you're selling free stuff. Everybody likes free stuff. And that's what one of the reasons that we as a country are not doomed is, I mean, we're all doomed. But
I'm going to debate that in a minute, but go ahead.
As a country, why is because we truly don't want socialism. Mm-hmm. We like being called victims. And as you're finding out, you may be a victim yesterday and you become tomorrow's oppressor. Martina Navratilova, she now knows that. Socialism requires, and it was, thank goodness John Stossel, I don't know if you've seen the mini documentary he did, there's a full documentary on it, on Sweden, because now it's coming back again because of Venezuela. It's coming back, but we want to be the Sweden kind of socialism. See, that's, and all of their hopes are on Sweden. Mm. And finally, John Stossel said, okay, I've had enough of this. Let's actually go over and talk to the people of Sweden and talk to the experts and find out if they're socialists. And they're like, we're not socialists. Now, we're more of a welfare state, but actually we're more free market than the United States. We're more free trade than the United States. We are more in the index of economic freedom. Sweden is actually more of a free market economy than the United States. That's because of all the cost of regulation that we've put here. Now, they were much more in the 70s and the 80s, and as Stossel explained, they eventually got out of it. But they're more socialist. Excuse me? They have vouchers. Their pension system is now private. Their Social Security, private. It's not what we have here. It's private. Yeah. Does government pay for health care? Yes, but it's decentralized, and it's decentralized. It's not a federal government taking care of it. It's decentralized, and the private sector competes. There is private health insurance and a private health care system also that exists within that system. And so the other thing is that the Swedish analysts wanted Americans to know is that in Sweden, the rich don't carry the burden. It's the middle class, because the middle class, the average person who pays taxes pays a lot more in the United States, because it's what we've always said. The rich, see, in New York City, the problem. You know, anything happens a little bit, boom, the rich. If the rich provide 40-50%, if you have an economic downturn, or if they decide to move somewhere else or put their assets somewhere else, you're screwed. What is the best way for a welfare, more of a welfare state, not socialist state, but a welfare state? As they said, we're more of a welfare state than the United States, but not as socialist, for example, in free market stuff as the U.S. Who takes the burden of it? The middle class. The middle class pay a lot more in taxes than the middle class in the United States. And that's what will save us, because people in the United States, we're not socialist. We want free stuff, and we like being called a victim and having an oppressor. That's a good feeling for a significant portion of Americans. Which, if you're really buying into being a socialist, it means all of your money goes into the pool, too.
And that's where it starts to fall apart when you, if you had the discussion, imagine, okay, we're going to do a focus group, right? Instead of pollsters doing call out, we're going to do a focus group, and we're going to say, okay, here's how it actually works. Here's what would be required. Bernie, Ocasio-Cortez, or any of them never get into the educational part of how socialism actually works. Or even where we are today as a nation, the flaws in the current system that we have because we've been edging closer and closer to socialism. But if you get down to it and you start talking, well, the couple in California, you have if you were to sit down and have the discussion and say, okay, here's why, because we knew at the beginning. When it's being promised you can keep your doctor, you can keep the plan, we knew that wasn't going to be the case because you're not going to, as a legislative body and as a president at that time, you're not going to force doctors to accept certain plans because that's never been the case, and there's no way you could actually do that.
Right.
So then we said it from the beginning. Well, he's not telling the truth. And then he kept repeating it, then President Obama. And we said, well, now he's lying because he knows the truth and he's saying something else. That's when you're lying. If you change what you're saying as a result of learning something, that's one thing. But when you talk to the American people, when you talk to individuals, when you talk to young people about how socialism works and what would be required of them, because if you start thinking of like free college, okay, great. Is it safe to say, college student, is it safe to say that we couldn't afford it for everybody? Well, yeah, it would be very expensive. Okay. So we'll pare it down. Well, your parents make too much. Your family makes too much because it wouldn't be on the student if you're a young person. It would be on the head of household going into college, right, when they're still in high school. Well, sorry, you're not going to get aid. You're not going to get this. That already happens, right? We already have grants and everything else. But when you're talking about a much broader socialist idea of paying for everyone's college, people know there's no way you're going to pay for all of that. Well, during the 2016 run, how are you going to pay for all of this? You had that question didn't come from Fox News. It came from two different people, Jake Tapper and Chris Cuomo on CNN. How do you pay for it?
You mean the 2018 election?
I mean 2018 election. How are you going to pay for this? When you had people running for office, they were talking about these big grand ideas. And ultimately, the media today is going to ask you, how are you going to pay for all of that? Well, Ocasio-Cortez just shut everybody down and said, well, you shouldn't worry about that. You should worry about the fact that the world is ending. Well, then let's move on to Medicare for all, or free college, or anything else you're promoting. And define how you need to very clearly define how you're going to pay for it, because the numbers are very clear. You can tax all of the billionaires everything, and you're still not there.
You're still way short. Yeah, you've got to go after the middle class. And that's one of the things that the Swedish Observer said, that that's one thing that the socialists in the United States don't talk about. Number one, we're a little bit more of a welfare state than the United States, but we're actually more free market and less socialist in our business dealings and in our trade. And even where government is involved in things, we have privatized it. Mm-hmm. The pension system, privatized. School vouchers, school choice, you go anywhere and compete with it. Those are things that in the liberal socialist system that the liberals want in the United States, it would all be gone. They want centralized control of a federal government controlling everything, which gets to the point, as we've said, of communism, which is what Ocasio-Cortez is promoting.
Yeah, because you can't get there. If you think about California considering at one time single-payer health care as a state, and the lawmakers didn't even put in a funding mechanism if you don't have a way to pay for it, so it was shut down. Right. Even at least one person in that state realized, well, you can't pay for it. Well, and how many other states? There have been a handful of other states that have looked into it and realized you can't pay for it.
Right, and it wouldn't be accepted, and so they want the federal government because the federal government can do the deficit spending.
Right.
So nobody has to pay for it right now. We, the liberals, believe the most moral way is let's put the burden on our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren.
Right. And if you're a 29-year-old freshman lawmaker from New York, You haven't even thought about the fact that, we hope that this is the case. You've got plenty of years on this planet left. At some point, you're going to have to pay for it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, it's really going to be fascinating over the next year and a half with the whole campaign and everything else, and with the Ocasio-Cortez and the Cory Bookers and the whole slate. O'Rourke, Skater Bob, coming out the other day and stating that he's not a socialist, he's a capitalist.
Right.
And I burst out laughing.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's trying to stake it. But the Nick Gillespie article from Reason Magazine, where he talked about the president in his 2-hour-long speech, he said, you know, with everything about the president, he did lay out in that long speech the difference between Republicans and Democrats. And there is a much darker side to the Democrats and how they view this country as compared to Republicans right now. And that's why I said, you know, is this the speech? You know, has the president already won just based on how the president can take those 5 or 6 issues that he believes that the majority of Americans believe that the Democrats don't believe? And you and I have talked about this many times. The president has the easiest job. All he has to do is convince the vast majority of Americans who already agree with him on the issues that he is the guy to implement those issues.
Right.
That's really the only thing the president has to do.
Yeah. And if you think about the Democrats and the things they were saying that mimic exactly what he's saying today, not 50 years ago, but just a few years ago, then people are seeing the hypocrisy on the left right now.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. You know, on the Sunday morning news shows yesterday, whether it was Mark Warner or whether it was Adam Schiff, talking about collusion, and there is evidence of Russian collusion. Both said it yesterday in the Sunday morning news shows. I was surprised Mark Warner said it, and then just went back to the firing of Comey, which was like, what?
Yeah,
you're kidding, and you're wondering why are they still going with that narrative? What is it about? You know, why wouldn't they both focus and say, okay, let's go after the finances, which they're going to do, but why wouldn't their focus, you know, be there? There's no evidence whatsoever. And I really wonder, because if you saw this on Face the Nation, the justice correspondent for CBS, Paula Reed, on Face the Nation. And it's about time we started hearing things like this, because these are allegations that have been going on now for over 2 years. That the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to hack the election, and then to hack into the DNC, and then to change the outcome of the election. And what we've heard now is a collusion still exists. Here's Paula Reed on Face the Nation yesterday, the CBS News justice correspondent.
We heard from Adam Schiff, the chairman of House Intelligence, this allegation of money laundering on behalf of Russia through the Trump Organization, but he admitted he had no proof of that thus far.
That's a pretty big bomb to lob without any corroboration. I also take issue with his claim that he has evidence of collusion. He seemed to be conflating contact with collusion. He says what happened at Trump Tower was collusion. He's pointing to emails. Mm-hmm. Nothing was exchanged there. Same with the meeting that Paul Manafort had with Konstantin Kilimnik, exchanging polling data. We know there was contact. We know that. But we don't know what they did with that polling data. So we certainly have evidence of contact, but a criminal conspiracy. So far, there has not been sufficient proof for anyone to be charged in that.
Because if you were to, the media can go down any path. We've seen them do it numerous times, especially on this one topic. But at this point, if you're not looking at it and saying exactly what you just heard, you don't even rise to the level of a hack. You're just delusional. And there's no other way to say it. Because there are no facts to support anything. Adam Schiff has been burned by his own lies again and again and again. And this is Adam Schiff being Adam Schiff. But at some point, the media has to kind of move on because there's nothing there. There's nothing come of this. And if you listen to the narrative over the last few weeks, the Mueller investigation seems to be heading to really just kind of a whimper of an ending, which means that there's likely no more indictments coming down. And if there are, they probably relate to lying to investigators or something else, things that we already know from other people, which had to do with incidents after the election and nothing to do with collusion. It's no surprise that they had to take this up. I think there were a couple of things over the weekend is that you couldn't deny the president's strength when it came to North Korea getting up and walking away. Did it really change anything? No, but at the very least, we didn't have another administration conceding to North Korea, lifting sanctions, giving them everything in exchange for nothing. And I think there was that that was in play. But I also think that the fact that the narrative on the Mueller investigation, where most believe it seems to be going, which is nowhere, they're going to have to pick up something else. The Democrats are going to have to grab something else. And I'm with you. Then why didn't you grab something where you've got a bunch of data? You can talk about the finances. And we've said from the beginning, if there is an Achilles heel for this president, it's going to be there. Now, I still think it's going to be an uphill battle. Because you're going to, along the way, you're going to have to prove intent. First of all, you're going to have to show where the law was broken. You're going to have to prove intent and everything else as a part of that investigation. And I don't know that the American public has much tolerance for it anymore. Not that they don't hate Trump, a number of them, but I think a number of people have just moved on going, you know, they've been screaming, crying wolf for over 2 years, and they've got nothing. This is purely politically driven.
Yeah, if you've listened to the show, we said this, even before the president won. We said if he becomes president, the biggest problem he will have is he's done so many business dealings all around the world that anything he does as president, you will be able to make some kind of case that he's either doing it, he's doing it for his own advantage, or he has, any deal that he makes, and especially with the business that if he can't give it up because it's impossible, as we said, to liquidate everything that he had. You can't liquidate it. You can't put it in a trust. It's not like it's just investments. He's been actively involved in this huge real estate enterprise. And we said, so either he is going to, anything that he does, they're going to go back and look into his past to see if he owes anybody. And that's exactly what's going on right now. And the 60 subpoenas will be going out apparently tomorrow from Gerald Nadler, because now they're going to look into his finances, even though they have nothing. Mm-hmm. They don't even know what they're looking for. They're going after, and is this going to be policy now for every single candidate? The reason maybe it hasn't been is you've never had somebody like Trump that has been actively involved when he became president in so many different businesses. It's the one vulnerability that he has that no other really president has, because most other presidents, if they were in business, were able to liquidate it, and so they were simply assets that were protected, or they were easily put into some kind of trust. You've never had anybody like Trump, so we always knew this was going to be something that the Democrats would look into. But I wonder if it goes a little bit further. I wonder, you know, Devin Nunes now saying he wants to talk to 32 different people. It's funny because the Democrats had 60. He had 32 about the whole dossier. Is it because are they amplifying it not just because they're afraid of a letdown from Mueller, but they're afraid of what the president is going to come up with next? They're afraid what Judicial Watch is going to come up with. They're afraid that slowly but surely the inspector, you know, the inspector general who's still looking at the FBI, who's still looking at the Hillary investigation, that it's slowly falling apart. That as it just, day by day, week by week, year by year, no matter how deep this intentional or non-intentional conspiracy was, because it could be a lot of people in different areas that didn't even know that they were working, doing the same thing, but had the same mindset going on, that eventually it's going to come out. That, look, what happened here? What happened here was... You had the intelligence agencies, the Department of Justice, that didn't want this president to be president of the United States, and they worked either not following policy or broke the law in order to an attempt to discredit a legitimate presidential election in this country. I mean, that's what the question really comes down to. You think about that. Anything else, when you put it in that context, anything else is minor, Eric.
Yes, it is.
It's minor.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if they're building all this stuff in this new direction in an effort to try and set up a situation where if all of that comes down and that information comes out, whether it's through the IG's office or the Justice Department, the Democrats can, they're going to try and claim, well, he's just trying to distract from our investigation into his finances, our investigation into this. I don't think it's going to work. And I think that the president has clearly played his hand. We've said this from the beginning with the IG. There is one role for the Inspector General's office. That is to look at, investigate whether there was criminal wrongdoing, any kind of wrongdoing, within that given department, not to give advice to the White House as to whether or not that information should be made public, but to look into the department itself to find out if there was any wrongdoing, and if so, who was responsible.
Has anybody except us ever asked that question?
No. I haven't seen anybody make that point.
If anybody's ever made that point, please let us know. In all my reading, I've never seen anybody else make that point the way that we've made it, because why wouldn't the president then release it? You know,
right.
The president said that you know, he would use it against the Democrats if they tried to do whatever to him.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, stop saying that. Don't say you're going to use it politically, but then ask whether you'd release the information to the American general public so they could know. And your response was, well, I don't know if they could handle it.
Mm-hmm.
That was when the president said that was completely and totally out of bounds. I don't know why. Again, we don't know why he says some things. Some things he says, for the life of me, I can't figure out. That's why you and I have said we have to see what the results are. For example, the whole thing with Kim Jong-un last week, when we were listening to it, we were telling him, shut up,
mm-hmm.
shut up,
mm-hmm.
shut up, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Say it a different way. What was the only thing on the Sunday morning news shows that stuck out of what happened there? Not whether the president succeeded or not.
Warm
what
beer.
Was the only thing?
It was warm beer.
It was warm beer. That was it. That was it. And we said that he can sit there and he can win something. He won that because he was willing to walk away. And what's the thing? And a friend of mine emails me, how can the president defend Kim Jong-un like that? You know, how can he say that? And he goes, because I'm behind the president. I'm like, look, the president doesn't agree with what went on. I don't believe the president agrees or even thinks that Kim Jong-un didn't know about it.
Right.
It's a whole thing that he believes is some kind of negotiating point. This president gets into his head sometimes, and I know a lot of you believe it, that he's the best negotiator. Sometimes I think he sucks as a negotiator. Sometimes he's good. Sometimes he sucks. He's like anybody else. Sometimes he's good. Sometimes he's horrible. I have no idea what negotiating point you win by saying that. You could have won the same point by saying, look, we're not going to get into that. We have talked. I've talked to the premier about that in the past already. We've made it known. We want to know what has gone on, and that's about all I'm going to say about that, and you move on to something else.
Our first goal was to get him home hostages home, and we got them home, the prisoners. We got them home. Unfortunately, as we all know now, it was too late to save him.
Right.
Clearly, we don't have all the answers right now, and that's all I'm going to say about the situation right now.
Right. To me, he knows, that's what I believe he really thinks.
Mm-hmm.
He knows Kim Jong-un is a murderous dictator.
Right.
The president knows that. He's not stupid. But in his head, he thinks it's some kind of dumb negotiating tactic that he has to go to extent to, he's a great guy. He's a really good guy. You know, so stop it.
Yeah.
You don't have to go that far and still make the points, with him. But, you know, as you said before, he's got Bolton there. He's got, Bolton was there over the weekend. That's all they were pounding him on. Mm-hmm. Was it, I forgot where it was now. Oh, it was Chuck Todd.
Mm.
Is it Chuck Todd? Kept pounding him on the same thing over and over again. And he really wouldn't answer the question. He said, well, what do you think about Warren Beer and what the president? He goes, it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what the president thinks. Well, what do you mean? Well, what do you think? He goes, it doesn't matter. And by the way, that's always been his answer to everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when he became the president's national security advisor, I think he thought, well, I want to stay here and advise the president because I think my advice to this president is something that's needed in this administration. But what if I go in? I think he probably thought this. But if I go in this, none of this is my opinion. I'm simply advising the president as to what to do and analyze the situation. But if they ask me for my personal opinion, I'll tell them over and over again, it's not my role. My role is not to give my personal opinion. My role is to tell you what the president's is.
Especially on matters that are not being negotiated at this point. If Warren Beer were still being held, that would be a different setting. But that would be a different scenario.
But Chuck Todd, tweeting like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He can't answer it. He won't defend the president. Mm-hmm. He didn't say he wouldn't defend the president. He said, doesn't matter what I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the person that you're at. I'm telling you what the president thinks, not what I think. Mm-hmm. And he kept pounding it because that's the one point they thought they had on him. And it was unnecessary to have that point. You had the win by walking away. And for some reason, look, this president has said ridiculous and stupid things in the past. Keeping the conspiracy theory going that Ted Cruz's father was involved in the Kennedy assassination,
mm-hmm.
for one thing. What he said about McCain, totally unnecessary, don't have to ever go there. Yet he goes there. Why? I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see that that's the only thing out of something that I thought was successful, you and I both said, look, when you look at it, he walked away. He said, I'm not going to agree to it. I'm not going to do an Iran deal. And the whole point is we didn't ever think to begin with that Kim Jong-un is going to give up his nukes.
Right.
You want to find out more about him. You want to study him. You want to get close to him. Hey, keep your friends closer and keep your friends close and your enemies even closer.
Well, and you just, it's a very simple answer to just about every question in that setting with the international media from Hanoi, and that is we didn't get, both sides didn't come to an agreement because too much was being demanded of us. So at this point, we'll talk in the future, but these talks are over. And that's really all you need to say. You don't need to talk about his personality or how you get along or anything else. We're here talking, and that should demonstrate all you need to know for what we're trying to get done.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. To add one more thing that was unnecessary, the Trump tweet on Sunday, right?
Right, yeah. And from, it was a series of tweets Sunday evening. For the Democrats to interview in open hearings a convicted liar and fraudster at the same time as their very important nuclear summit with North Korea is perhaps a new low in American politics and may have contributed to the walk in quotations, never done when a president is overseas. Shame.
There was a lot of comment on that going, what the hell did that mean?
Well, either you walked based on not getting what you wanted from North Korea, which is exactly Which is, by the way, fine with anybody in a scenario like that. Most people don't want you to concede to North Korea on right. anything. You don't need to tie it to the whole Cohen thing. The whole Cohen thing was weak to begin with. It's behind us. To bring it up again on Sunday adds more fire to the whole thing. It didn't have any credibility. It, in fact, we talked about in the days after even the first 12 hours after the Cohen testimony. It was done. I mean, they didn't have anywhere to go on it.
Well,
had no credibility to begin with.
Remember, we said by the time we come on the air today that it'll really be gone, and
right.
it's gone.
Right. So you don't need to offer that as possible reason for the walk. So now you're saying it had nothing to do with negotiations for your nuclear summit.
It's your personal politics?
Right.
Which, of course, it's not, so why bring it up?
Here's your forecast.
A severe tornado outbreak in the south yesterday. Many people are still missing. There are at least 22 reported killed and dozens badly hurt after flying debris and ripped off roofs were reported in portions of the south. Alabama and Georgia, the primary states, although we have reports of touchdowns in Florida as well. Beauregard, Alabama, just south of I-85 to the east and slightly north of Montgomery along I-85. The track of tornado touchdowns and the outbreak then went to the north and east, just north of Columbus, Georgia. There were literally thousands of lightning strikes associated with the storm. There are thousands of people without power this morning. If you're driving through the region, there is debris scattered across state roads and the potential for some road closures. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
Unvarnished and honest. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary. 866-90 Red Eye. So I look. I guess the entire point is with the president, whether it's CPAC or what he said when he was in Vietnam, and where we thought he had a 100% win, and then the media is able to focus on something that's tough for anybody to get a handle on as to why he said it about the whole Otto Wear and Bear thing and Kim Jong-un not knowing about it when you stay away from that is the fact of, and after the president then with a 2-hour speech that I thought was mostly good, I'm just afraid that he'll get back into his old habits that he seems to have been out of the last 2 months, where he's been extremely focused in communicating instead of just going into a tangent that doesn't make any kind of sense and has everybody's focused on what in the world is he talking about.
Yeah, there's really no need to, I think, even revisit anything that went on in Hanoi. Nothing. Move on. You don't have to talk about, especially when it comes to relating it to Cohen. The Cohen testimony fell flat.
Yeah, that's another part of it. Why even bring it up? What does that have to do with anything?
You even had Democrats and liberal media come out and discount what Cohen was saying, a number of items that they said, yeah, no, he's clearly not telling the truth here. So the point being, and we knew that that was going to be the case. We knew that it was going nowhere.
I think the one thing that hurt the most was the universal agreement that Cohen lied about not wanting to have a job at the White House.
Right. Yeah.
Where everybody knew that's a lie. Well, if that's a lie, and that's such an obvious lie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started thinking with Cohen's testimony the other day after he said that, we need to bring back an old scene from the show.
They're not even trying.
They're not even trying.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting because I thought about that the other day when I was, kind of separating all the different lies, sorting all the different lies, because you look at something that might be actionable. There were a number of things. I mean, if it's sworn testimony, than anything he says. They're going to try and hold him accountable for. But things like the whole bank fraud thing, and it was important on whether he not whether or not he wanted to work inside the White House. That you may think that that is, you know, well, splitting hairs, it doesn't matter. No, because it goes to his motivation. And it shows you that he was quite possibly more driven to protect his own future and do things without the direction or, I guess, consideration of the president. In other words, he had something to gain personally. Then you go through the testimony and talk about the all of the other things that he gains, you know, possibly mm-hmm. consideration for less jail time, for cooperating, or a book deal, movie deal, all these things. It becomes a number of things that he has to gain from being there. But the point being is that, you know, with the president, there he doesn't need to do that. There's zero calling for him to answer for anything else. You don't need to keep harping on Cohen. Even the leftist media is not on the whole thing. Now, of course, they had to include it on their Sunday morning shows. But nobody's paying attention by that time. It's already an issue that's behind you. You don't need to do anything. You don't need to do anything else on that. It's going to, right now, I think, that whole situation speaks for itself with Cohen. So then you talk about what is required what should a president be doing in this situation? Well, focusing on the positive.
Yeah.
Focusing on, hey, we're pretty close to a deal with China. Hey, we expect some really great news soon on this or that, or look at the unemployment numbers, the economy, a number of things you can focus on without having to bring up Cohen.
Well, no, we're close to getting a deal with China. Well, mm-hmm. what about Korea? Well, we're still continuing the negotiations
right.
With them, and we'll continue the negotiations. And if anything is going to change, I'm sure we'll let you know. But I've got the great people of Mike Pompeo and John Bolton, you know, working with me day in and day out. The State Department's doing a great job on that. Otherwise, hey, what about that Green New Deal? You were willing to give up your plane flights? Willing to attack the other side? Don't bring up stuff that just... Here's the thing, Eric. It doesn't even make any kind of sense. Well, the president is talking about stuff that just doesn't make any... It's let me put it this way. We've used the word with Comey. It's odd.
It is odd, because if you think about it, the speech at CPAC, then just in your social media, for those that may not be aware of everything you said in that speech, make the key points on Twitter.
Yeah, the difference between us and them.
Because that's sort of, that's
right
relevant.
There, yes.
That's something you can talk about that is relevant. Well, no, you've handed the media, oh, well, it really wasn't about a negotiating tactic and walking away. It was, as the president admits, quite possibly about the whole Cohen thing.
Right. So the president's not doing his job because of Cohen.
Right.
The president didn't negotiate with North Korea because of Cohen.
Right.
Because of his personal animosity, because of Cohen. Why even bring it up? Why are you giving them any type of ammunition? I mean, it was just, it's odd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is makes
odd.
It's one of those things that the president does again that makes no kind of sense, does nothing to give him an advantage at all.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones who you say, okay, so he tweeted that one, huh?
Because I think he had a win in North Korea. I think walking away was a good thing.
As we got to the weekend, and there was really no criticism, a lot of people complimenting him, even from the left, saying, look, he's not going to make a deal like Obama made with Iran.
Right.
You've won it.
Yeah. And now, I mean, it shows that that you're reactionary on something else. There should be no distraction because the whole Cohen thing didn't mean anything. That's your position. Well, he's a liar. Yeah. He's a convicted liar. I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about the safety of the free world. And I walked away and I wasn't about to give up something concede once again in a situation where we didn't have to. And we'll keep talking, see what happens down the road. End of story. The news conference on from Hanoi would have been very short for me. Well, what can you talk? What can you say about Otto Warmbier? Our goal was always to get Mr. Warmbier and the others home. We were able to do that, and unfortunately, it wasn't in time to save Otto Warmbier. I can't tell you everything we talk about, but certainly we have issued our concerns, and we still have a great number of concerns, and we will work to, at some point, be fully satisfied with that situation. I'm not going to talk beyond that because I think it's disrespectful to the family and anything else. You don't have to compliment Little Rocket Man. That's not necessary. It's not. Nobody else will do it. Oh, except for those that are under his power and would be threatened with death if they didn't. You don't need to do that. He's here. We're glad he's here at the table. We're grateful that he showed up to talk, and we're hoping someday that this will mean a more peaceful region and a more peaceful world. We're looking for the safety of not just our interests, but all of our allies' interests and the free world. That's what this is all about, and we'll continue to work to that effort. As long as I'm president, you have my word. That is going to be our mission. You don't have to, again, compliments of him aren't necessary. And fully explaining, I've said I don't know how many times that one of the positives of the president is that he's not afraid to talk to the media. But one of the downsides is he's not afraid to talk to the media.
I'll always remember certain moments of talk radio when we were in here listening to it when we were playing it live, and mm-hmm. you turned to me and just said, he needs to shut up.
Yeah, stop talking.
Stop talking.
Because I don't believe that he's giving deference to Kim Jong-un, but guess what? From the answer, the world can believe that.
Yeah.
Don't ever, ever give them that kind of room, because I really don't believe that's the case. And if it is, you shouldn't be president.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
Sunday evening brought deadly tornadoes to the southeast. Let's get more as we turn to Red Eye Radio meteorologist John Trout. You also know him as host of Westwood One's America in the Morning. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning. It was a bad, bad afternoon. And for the folks that have not heard yet, let me define the area where this was. If you can picture south of I-85. Now, that runs from Montgomery to Atlanta. South of there, right along mid-state, the states of eastern Alabama, western Georgia, and the county was Lee County, where we believe 22 people were killed yesterday. The death toll is even higher than that from that severe tornado outbreak yesterday, guys.
How fast was this storm system moving?
Right now, it's believed the wind speeds were 165 miles an hour. Now, to put that in hurricane terms, that's a Cat 5 hurricane. For the tornado scale, that's like an EF3. But as is typical with these tornadoes, we don't know until the National Weather Service goes in and lets us know what that was, because that comes after the fact. They'll go in, they'll look at the debris field, they'll look at how wide it was. They'll look at 2x4s. Are they twisted? Are they splintered? Are they stuck in trees? And they know from having done this for so many years what those wind speeds will eventually be reported as.
John, this is a quite wide tornado, right? Because you had 23 deaths, but in a rural area, not an urban area or not a suburban area, right?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, the impact was in rural areas, but that doesn't lessen the fact that we do have deaths, injuries. We have mobile homes primarily in this region, and flattened, just nothing there left but the concrete slab. We've got roofs torn off. There's glass, debris. That's where we're picking up a lot of these injuries. You know, areas like this, especially in late afternoon, you get these severe thunderstorms 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's what happened yesterday. And then you only get about an hour before sunset.
Yeah.
So these guys can't get in there, these emergency workers and officials, to really help people assess the damage. We're not going to know until sunrise this morning really just how bad this situation is.
Storm season for the folks who do what you do begins really about March 1st. How, I guess, typical or abnormal is this situation that we saw play out yesterday?
Well, you know, May tends to be the highest for tornadoes in terms of the frequency. But for the severity, right now, the winds way up there, 10, 15, 20,000 feet, they're very, very cold. And air at the surface yesterday was very, very warm. That different ingredient really helps to fuel these afternoon tornadoes. You put a little moisture in there, you get the vertical lift. Those thunderstorms shoot up to tens of thousands of feet up in the atmosphere. You get the instability, you get a little wind shear action, and you've got the soup that creates these tornadoes. But typically, the most occur in May, but the more deadly, like this, occur really this time of year or any time of year. You know, Dallas, Oklahoma, all the way into the Midwest, this is tornado season.
Yeah. Yeah, is there any reason to believe this year on a larger level will be more active in terms of storm seasons?
I don't think so. I think perhaps people might begin plugging that climatological data into weather. And those are two different things. When you look at climatology, you're looking at perhaps hundreds or thousands of years, depending upon the time frame upon which you'd like to study. Weather is happening in the here and now, so we may have a good historical view after this tornado season, but there's nothing necessarily to suggest that this year will be any worse than others. We get a better read on that with hurricanes, and that's due to the El Niño or La Niña flow down in the equatorial Pacific when the waters are either colder or warmer. But in terms of tornadoes, you can't really predict that too far out in the future.
Red Eye Radio meteorologist John Trout. John, thank you so much.
Thanks,
for being
John.
Out there and spending some time with us this morning. We know you're busy and we'll let you get back to that. Thank you, John.
Pray for the folks in the South. Thanks, guys.
We certainly will. Thank you. And also, you can hear on our very own Westwood One, America in the Morning with John Trout. And
great
Yeah,
great
show. And John, very experienced. And by the way, also does a good job internally. I don't know, the people don't get this exposure to it, but we have a basically a site, a company site that we can go to, and John shares a lot of the data in situations like this so that our folks that do what we do on this end can be more informed. So we appreciate that help, John. Thank you.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.